This month's episode of Shocked at Applaud contains some content not suitable for all audiences or workspaces. Listen at your own discretion.
And the one to the upper part of his right thigh is 4711, which is a cologne that I have ordered for
you. Yes! Knew you loved me. I knew you did. It's a unisex cologne with citrus scents, and I'm going to put it all over my body. And then I'm going to put on 52 ounces of lip gloss.
Recreate that magic.
Oh my gosh. I have to get on finding a cape. What is about to happen as they approach this castle is something that they will remember for a very, very long time. It doesn't describe them as together, doesn't describe it as a happy ending, doesn't describe it any which way except for that it will be momentous to them. And that's good. That's good foreshadowing, because then you don't have like the set Hollywood ending expectation.
Another aspect of this movie that I really like is the mockumentary style.
Yes, I don't mind cutting away to an expert to change tone or momentum, or because we're going from what is a very like, you know, this what's to come kind of like Disney ballad, and now we get to be like, okay, really starting now,
right? And when they get to the front of the door, they. It's not,
I want to go, Brad. I'm wet and I'm frightened. She sounds like that for three quarters of the movie.
Yeah. And then we get the door open and we see Richard O'Brien as Riff Raff. And he just says, hello. And for the longest time, whenever I wanted to say hello in a weird way, that's how I always said it. Yes. And I think it's because of this movie.
You're about to get a whole dose of, I do it this way because of this movie, and I didn't realize it until today.
Yeah.
You're all wet.
Yeah, and they explain that, you know, their car had a flat. And
yes, it's raining. And yeah. She looks at Brad like, what the f***?
And when he lets them in, Brad says, oh, it's we're lucky that you guys were home. And that's when on the stairs, Magenta shows up. She's like, he's lucky. You're lucky. We're all lucky.
Yes. She slides down the banister.
Mm-hmm.
And they together, she's like, oh, how does it start? Are you having a party? It's one of the master's affairs, you know, and then how does the song start? Oh my goodness. Find the first lyric. I can tell you the rest of it by heart. Oh my God.
It's astounding.
Yeah. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll.
Okay, but before he starts singing.
That was singing and it was gorgeous.
According to Richard O'Brien, there was a skeleton in a clock right before the song starts,
mm-hmm.
which happens right after he says this way. Which I totally expected Brad and Janet to like start walking with the
hunch.
Hump.
Yeah.
Just because that's what they do in Young Frankenstein.
Yes.
Okay. But
is this before or after Young Frankenstein?
Wow. I think they're maybe around the same time, but this might be before.
Hold on. We got to fact check ourselves.
I know that 74 was Blazing Saddles because we did Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein was 1974.
Nice.
Okay,
that was a year for Mel Brooks.
So the skeleton in the clock was a real life skeleton belonging to.
You mean a real dead skeleton? A real life skeleton doesn't make any sense.
Life, not real living.
That's where the comedy is. A real life skeleton
belonging to the woman who commissioned the clock. She bought the clock for her to be put inside.
Oh, iconic.
That's why it had like a purple hat thingy on it.
So the skeleton that you see is a real.
Which is why he doesn't dust it too hard. Well, of course, you look at that house, nobody dusts too hard.
In 2002, Sotheby's auctioned off the coffin clock and it sold for £35,000.
I would buy that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do something weird with my body after death.
The most realistic, I've thought about this. Mm. So the most, there's two ways that I'd like to go. Like as far as like my body goes, like there's a part of me, and this is real dark, but.
Take us there, baby.
When I get super old, if space travel is viable for people who are super old, I kind of just want to get put like if you could figure out like an hour before or like a few hours before I was going to die, put me into a spacesuit, shove me out into space and just let me be out in space. Like my last moments would be away from humanity in the void of space. I would like to go out like that.
With like some polite drugs to make it pleasant.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I don't think that's realistic because you can never really tell when you're going
to
die.
Oh, I'll be able to tell you when you die. I'll be in charge of the drugs.
I mean, like,
we all know I'm going first. Yeah, don't worry.
Anyways, but more realistically, like if I die suddenly, I kind of want my entire, like, I want all of the flesh off of my body. And it's
like beetles.
You could do that. I just want my bones to be intact, and I want them to be put into a science room for like teenagers, like a middle school science room.
Yeah.
And every time they act up, I want the teacher to point to my bones and say, "That's what happened to the last person who pissed me off."
Awesome. Iconic. Beautiful. I wanted to be turned into diamonds and placed into bad looking costume jewelry for a very long time. Then I was thinking a body farm, but I'm too lazy to sign up for one. And so my current plan is opioids and Netflix. And please leave me alone.
Yeah.
I don't fear dying alone. I would like drugs and to watch TV alone.
Yeah.
So the time warp.
Jen, you didn't tell us how you want to go.
Do I have to?
No.
Just tell me what to do with your body.
You don't have to. I mean, that's a conversation between the two of you sans podcast.
But if it's in the podcast, then it's legally binding.
But then what if Jen changes her mind?
Well, then we'll
She's
going
to have to say it in the podcast.
Just because it's a recording doesn't make it legally binding.
Jen, I know that. Don't talk to me in your podcast ease.
Note from producer, this doesn't have to be reality.
I just wanted you to tell me what to do with your corpse.
Yeah, spare of the moment, Jen. Come on. Come on.
I'm sorry.
When you die,
is
what's
it too much?
Happen?
No, I'm sorry. It's fine. I will bury you or burn you or put you in one of those tree pods.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
something
sure.
respectful. I'll do something nice.
Wear me as a necklace. I don't care.
Time warp, honey?
O'Brien's original script for the stage musical, The Rocky Horror Show, was only 40 minutes long, so the hit song The Time Warp was written to fill up space.
It's like the most iconic song in the musical. This is the one where you have the jump to the left and then the step to the right, and it gets intercut with a crimologist or the expert.
Who's like giving you a step by step with these charts? That's amazing.
Yeah.
He also, okay, wait. So at the beginning of the song, when Riff Raff is dusting the clock, he walks past. Oh, and this is my, I didn't do like an official list because I didn't have my paper notes. I had to take notes on my phone this time. So it kind of stinks. But I have in my notes all of the times that I could observe pieces of famous artwork within the film, which I think they use a lot. And I think since they use it a lot, it must be on purpose. And so I thought I'd try to point it out. I am no way have caught them all. There's a lot of statues, and I caught like a Venus de Milo, and there's some that look like David, but they're a little bit different, so I didn't include those because they're obviously remakes and not prints of the original. So during the beginning of The Time Warp, we see an actual copy of the American Gothic.
Mm-hmm. And that was referenced at the beginning with Brad and Janet's musical number, where... Riff Raff and Magenta are looking like American Gothic.
Yes, and most of these paintings are either altered or framed in a way that makes them look different than the original. So this one, the wife in the Gothic is looking at her husband like, what the f***? Like just kind of like one eyebrow raised and like head turned a little bit. So I think it was altered because I think the original, if I'm remembering correctly, is much more like sad face forward.
Right.
Or at least that's what the painting at Red Robin when I was little looked like, yeah. Except there was a burger in it.
During the song, they go into a space where there's this big party going on. My note says, international gathering of nonconformists.
I want to be those people.
I want to be at that party.
I do. Everybody in the same tails and little kitten heels.
I will wear a if I can only be at that party wearing that outfit, I'm totally on board.
Oh, yeah. And lots of them have cool glasses. It's super diverse. There's big people, little people, tall people, short people, brown people, white people, Asian people, except they might not be people. That's a spoiler. You can cut that out. but there's a banner that says annual convention of Transylvanians.
Mm-hmm.
We also see the Mona Lisa on the wall twice. And I think they're mirrored. So they're facing both. I could be wrong. But the angle makes her look like she's smirking. The smile is more defined than in the actual Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's flags everywhere.
Right, because they're international. I think these are people who are just kind of coming together, or maybe they are Transylvanians.
I just saw a lot of German flags, and it took me the second time before I was like, oh no, there's a Swedish one and a British one.
There was a Japanese one. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So they got them from all over the world.
Yeah. But did you notice that Brad starts to dance a little bit? And I keep wanting to call her Susan. but Janet, Janet elbows him and is like, let's go.
Yeah, because when the song gets finished, they
all fall down.
Yeah, and she's the one who's like inching them away, backing up slowly, mm-hmm. and like, we need to get out of here. These people are crazy. And Brad's just like, no, this is just their folk dance.
Right. He's like, does anybody? She's like, say something. And he goes, does anyone know how to Madison?
And as they're backing up, we see the elevator coming down, and it gets
there's a beat.
Yeah, and you see like you see like shoes bouncing to it, and because it gets intercut with like you have a shot of them backing up towards an elevator, and then you have like heels on a shoe like tapping, like
a cape mm-hmm. coming down. Oh, it's so iconic. And it is a delight, and it happens a couple different times in this. It is truly a musical unlike any other musical that we've reviewed, because they'll go from one song directly into another song, and that is just...
more operatic.
It really does feel more complete and better flowing in a lot of ways, because you don't need a lot of, like, filler in between, you know, we have introduced these characters, and now we're getting to, like, the main guy, and so...
mm-hmm. And this is the master of the house. This is... Dr. Frankenfurter, played by Tim Curry. And honestly, if I was Tim Curry, this is how I would walk into every room, just with like a dramatic cape and then like music playing.
Well, they slowly turn it's because they just noticed the elevator. And then he turns around. Janet, for the second time in the film, screams and faints. And when Tim Curry opens his gorgeous mouth and goes, how do you do, I? His glossy lips is why I spent thousands of dollars on lip gloss in junior high and high school. I wore so much lip gloss, and Jen probably ate a gallon of it over the course of our early relationship. And I'm so sorry, but if you'd like to write a formal complaint, you can send it to Tim Curry.
And after he reveals himself to Janet, he walks up into the party, and then he gets, there's like a throne.
Yeah, a silver and black throne.
Yeah.
And he goes to stand in front of it, and he, okay, so what does the line go? It goes, how do you die? So you've met my faithful handyman. He's just a little brought down because when you knocked, he thought you were the handyman.
Candyman.
Candyman. Don't get strung out by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I might not be much of a man by the light of day, but by night, I'm one hell of a lover. And then he throws back the cape that has been completely covering him, all a Batman, right? Corset, fishnets.
Wonder Boy's just really attentive as you're talking about this, so please continue.
Okay, corset, fishnets, platform shoes, garters, and like... tattoos, and this beautiful mess of curly hair, and like a thin dark black eyebrow, and like full eyeshadow, a red black lip. That I did that a lot in junior high. And they didn't have black lip liner back then, so I used black eyeliner, and then you put on your red in between, and then you apply 35 ounces of lip gloss, and it's not for me, but I did it a lot, and it was so, it felt so powerful. You know how I love a powerful lip. And And that's where, that's how I truly like take in Tim Curry in this scene.
I have two Sean facts.
Oh, he also has a giant pearl necklace. And for Christmas several years ago, I asked Jen to get me the biggest pearl necklace that she could find. And it's because of this movie.
Many movies have Easter eggs, little hidden things waiting to be noticed by sharp-eyed fans. But Rocky Horror has actual colored eggs hidden around the set. The crew allegedly had staged a literal Easter egg hunt, and some of them proved so well hidden that they ended up in the movie, including one you see beneath Frankenfurter's throne.
That's awesome.
And Frankenfurter's tattoo on his upper right arm reads Boss and has a heart on it. And the one to the upper part of his right thigh is 4711, which is a cologne that I have ordered for
you.
Yes!
Knew you loved me. I knew you did. It's a unisex cologne with citrus scents, and I'm going to put it all over my body. And then I'm going to put on 52 ounces of lip gloss.
Recreate that magic.
Oh my gosh. I have to get on finding a cape. Big old cape. I can't find a corset that works for me, but maybe at some point I will.
And we are at this point really far into the song Sweet Transvestite from, that's the name of it.
But I'm just a sweet transvestite from Transylvania.
Transsexual Transylvania.
So there is a talk back and forth where Brad asks for a phone and he's just like, you got cut with a flat. Well, how about that? He does his direct to camera. I guess coming out of the, no, I really don't think it's direct to camera when he comes out of the elevator, but he does a direct to camera here when he goes, you got cut with a flat. Well, how about that? And I think that's our nod to the fact that he did it.
Mm-hmm.
They never explicitly say, but these two randos become central part of this evening. And so I think it's on purpose. And he assures that he assures them that he will get them a satanic mechanic. And he's shaking hands and like holding court a little bit. And then he goes, at the end of it, he gets into the elevator and he's like, so why don't you come up to the lab and see what's on the slab? I see you shiver with anticipation.
Say it. Say it.
Say it.
Patient.
Thank you.
So good. Maybe the rain isn't really to blame, so I'll relieve the cause, but not the symptom. And I think it means he's getting their car fixed, but they're still stuck there. That's what I like to think, that once they, if they get out of there, they are fine. So he's gone. The guests start moving out of the room, and Riff Raff and Magenta start peeling all their clothes off and like wiping them down with bloody rags, which is funny. And Columbia walks up behind them as they're getting peeled. And she's like, oh, slowly, slowly. It's too nice a job to rush.
And a little bit about the costumes. Riff Raff and Magenta have these very much maid and butler outfits, respectively. Mm-hmm. But Columbia is the one who's in a sequin corset, sequin like hot pants,
booty shorts,
booty
real.
Shorts, and a sequin top hat. Like
yes, and a little blazer. She looks like a ringleader, and she has tap shoes. She tapped during the time warp number.
Yeah, she had a solo as well.
Yeah, and she also mentions in that solo a guy with devil's eyes who picks her up, and that song leaves it ambiguous, but we find out more later.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, yeah.
So Brad is in his underwear and
high-waisted,
and Janet is in her in a bra and a slip
and panties,
and she does have panties
and
on.
She's got her little white little heels on.
Mm-hmm.
I think he keeps his shoes on too for now.
Yeah,
it makes sense. So then they are led by Magenta and Riff Raff into the elevator.
Riff Raff is pouring wine into a cup.
It's champagne.
It's champagne. Yeah. And then he drops the bottle and it just cracks and he gets into the elevator.
I like that he drinks directly out of the bottle. And mm-hmm. You're like, why is he holding that glass? He drops the bottle and you're like, well, that seems like a waste. And
yeah.
They get up to the elevator and they get it up in the elevator. And when it opens, he like delivers the champagne to Frankfurter.
And Frankfurter is in a green like smock for like, it looks like like a surgeon's mm-hmm. smock. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's when Frankenfurter makes this big speech about that the reason why everyone is here is because he has discovered the ability to bring life into the world.
Yes. Now we kind of get the idea that Brad is charmed during the dancing part because he's trying to be like jovial and like, yeah, no, they're just eccentric and everything, right? But Frankenfurter really like charms Janet in this scene. He goes, what charming underclothes you have. But I believe that these, and they get thrown some lab jackets, and that these will make you feel less
vulnerable.
And that's our second true direct to camera. And only Tim Curry can do these for me. Jim Halpert can go eat a bag of but I really like it when Tim Curry be looking at me and being like, vulnerable. you get it. I'm going to do stuff. He snaps his gloves twice while he gives a speech about how he has found the secret to life itself. And he found it by accident. And it's all very dramatic. And this is the scene where we start to notice that all of the levers, although they are not explicitly penises, they do have like a rounded, knobbed black end and a red shaft, and you just kind of they're toggles, so you like switch them up real hard, and so they look erect when they're on, and it's so funny. And then that's like the sonic oscillator, and then I never remember what the second one is because he's like turn the something something up by three, and they look like they're little red lights that light up, and it looks like Doritos, and that's what you scream in the audience. Turn it up by three more Doritos. And then this big fixture comes down, and he pours ink into the, well, we know it is ink, but like it's chemicals into the tank, and it chemicals into the tank, and it becomes a rainbow. And now you talk about that.
Okay, so he dramatic behind Frankenfurter before this point, he has this like thing covered in a red tarp, and then he dramatically reveals that there's a body in a tank, and it's just like, sort of like covering in the tank.
Yes, and it's covered in wrappings.
Yes. And then that's when the thing comes down and he starts putting the chemicals in there, and
the room goes dark and it's flashing.
And as the chemicals are getting put in there, mm-hmm. you start seeing in this tank the like essentially the colors of the rainbow. And this is not the first time that we see it. When Brad and Janet are coming up to the house, Jen had noted that there is a rainbow.
Oh no, I think
it.
That's at the end of the movie.
No, it happens at the beginning
and the
yeah,
end.
Yeah,
what a fancy gay castle.
Yeah. But what's interesting about that is the first appearance of the rainbow pride flag was in 1978. This movie predates that.
This just means that the rainbow had to have been associated with the movement a long time before, I think.
Right.
I don't think that's an accident. Richard doesn't seem like the person who would not notice that.
I completely agree. Also, there's this thing about homogeny and heteronormativity that is just so bland. And back in the 1970s, there would have been that white aspect to it. Mm-hmm. Though this is a movie that probably is latched onto queer... Sorry, I don't think that I should be saying that.
You're allowed to say the word queer.
Mm.
You don't have to be part of the queer community to say the word queer, as long as you're not being derogatory.
Okay. I've always seen that as like us. Like it's like certain, you know.
It's not like the N-word. You don't have to be black. You have to be black,
yeah,
to use the N-word appropriately. But the word queer has evolved from being a derogatory comment to merely include the LGBTQ plus community without having to be super explicit in the designation. So I know that I'm only like queer adjacent, mm-hmm. is what I've been described as, which is I don't think is fair,
yeah,
because I'm rather involved at this point, but I just think that, and always use your discretion and what makes you comfortable, but just know that it's not a faux pas.
I only correct myself because the Alphabet Mafia is not a monolith, and I don't want to go out of my way to offend anybody.
Mm-hmm. So. I don't think anybody's going to track you down and be right. Like, how dare you be supportive of us and use language we mildly disagree with for whatever reason.
Well, but some people don't mildly disagree with it. Oh. That's what I'm saying. Like, there is a like that word is very, very heavy. So I'll refer to the Alphabet Mafia because I think that's a little bit...
It's funnier?
It's fun. It's a... it's something that as a cis person, a cis straight person, I feel like is...
It's tongue in cheek,
but yeah. It also doesn't... I'm not doing LGBTQIA+, yeah. Which is a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, I'm the plus sign, and I don't think if I referred to myself as that, it would be like, you know, like, what? I'm Naomi, I'm cis plus.
But the
blood type.
Going back to my...
I'm a tall glass of tea, by the way.
Yeah, you're a short glass of tea.
Oh, well, yeah.
But frosty. Sorry.
Going back to my original point, there's something about heteronormativity that is just so bland and cookie cutter, mm-hmm. that when you have like things in the alphabet mafia that are so colorful, there's a reason why there's the colors that are generally used in pride flags are just so eye grabbing, mm-hmm. is because they're like, we're needing to get attention.
Well, the more you get used to the different flags, the more you can see just how wide the spectrum really is. Mm-hmm. We just bought our pride flag. We haven't got a flagpole for it yet, so I just hung it up in the living room. But Jen uses the trans flag predominantly for self-representation, but I have chosen the, and maybe, I don't know if I'll change my mind, but it's the all-inclusive pride flag, so it has RGBIV plus black and brown to represent persons of color who definitely were like the instigators of the Reformation about laws regarding gay people and the alphabet mafia. But it also has trans inclusion, and the one I choose has intersex inclusivity to it too. So it's got a yellow triangle with a blue circle in it. And that's just because I feel like it better represents sex, gender, orientation, and presentation, so that you recognize that all of those things are included in the alphabet mafia,
right?
it's just interesting, and I think you have a really good point, because Brett and Janet are literally wearing pink and blue,
mm-hmm.
except now they're in a lab coat and they're white underpants. Yeah. They've been stripped of their identities. And now they're going to be broken, essentially. And I'm excited for it.
Right. Going back to the movie, though, after all of those colors are put into the tank, there's no electricity. There's
the pulsing light, and then there's some sort of reaction. Although there's not explicit, I keep using these words over and over again. Although there is not physical lightning, the body kind of zaps, and you see a skeleton through the wraps, and I realize that's one of my favorite tropes of all time. I just like to see a skull through stuff. It happened in Army of Darkness. It happens in like half of a million of other things, and I just love it so much.
And that's when the body comes to life.
It lives!
And it's no longer suspended, which it looks like the when you first see it before the chemicals get added, it's like there's a body suspended in the tank, but there's also water.
No, so like some sort of liquid.
Yeah.
But then the liquid goes away, and like we don't know where.
Right. Well, the chemicals obviously did something.
Yeah.
It evaporated.
It stained the tank, though, which I really, mm-hmm. like.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was permanent or if it was like watercolor or something. I don't know. But everybody's like, ah! And Frankfurter and Riff Raff climb the side of the tanks. Riff Raff pulls his face mask off, and we launch into what is truly a song I don't like.
Yeah, I agreed. Because, like, what is it? This is Rocky. This is the creature that Frankenfurter has created, and he grabs onto the thing that had the chemicals in it, and he gets and Riff Raff like pulls a lever, and it gets, and he lifts up, and he starts singing this song about the Sword of Damocles, which, for those of you not in the know, the Sword of Damocles is just sort of like something bad is going to happen. It's like the other shoe's going to drop.
Yeah, the Sword of Damocles is held up by a piece of rope, and as it swings back and forth, the rope shreds, and so it is an ominous warning. It's true. And so, like, how does this guy who's just born, how does he... Okay, so we've talked about sex idiots before, right, on the podcast, and if you want to hear about that, go to one of our other episodes, but...
Earth Girls Are Easy, I believe, has a couple.
Okay, Okay, so spoilers. We learn that he's got half of his brain from a different adult human, right? So is he a baby or is he not? They keep referring to him having been just born, right?
And he refers to himself only being alive for like 7 hours later in the film. So I mean, for me, I'm thinking he's a kid. He's a baby.
So everything that happens with him is gross to me in that way.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way that even when I first watched this as a kid, I was always like, okay, that's a little bit weird, you know, mm-hmm. but you know, as a kid, you don't really examine those things very, very in depth, but like, it's still like, no, this is the thing that if I remade this movie, I would probably change it. So that way, you knew that it was like, there would be that reference of him being just born is like, it would be taken out altogether.
Right. I think it's important. Okay, so let's just go on. He's singing "The Sword of Damocles is hanging over my head." I don't get a good voice. Now, he doesn't talk most of the time at all. But I don't know what kind of voice they're trying to give me. Is he Elvis or not? So I don't know. But he starts running away, and this is great because you know how much we love consent. He starts running away from the doctor.
Yeah.
And the doctor keeps running after him. And I don't necessarily like that, but my notes do say that pissed off Curry is a blessing because he keeps running and falling and being like, "Rocky!" And he's like tripping over himself. His fishnet legs are like coming out of a smock, and they run around all the way around this circular room that has like, it has the Transylvanians up on this raised platform, raised part of the round of it. And he runs through them like two times at the very least. And it's kind of fun.
Rocky's singing voice was dubbed in post-production by Australian singer Trevor White. Both Hinwood and White were interviewed by Scott Michaels for his 2002 book, Rocky Horror, From Concept to Cult. His portrayal of Dr. Frankenfurter's creation was the most significant role of Hinwood's limited acting career. I have a little bit of more detail there. That was a Jen fact. The Sean fact associated to that was Peter Hinwood is now an antiques dealer in London. He told People magazine in 2000 that there were three reasons why he chose not to continue to milk his horror moment. One, I can't act. Two, I cringe with embarrassment every time I see myself on film. And three, I relish a quiet, peaceful life. Hinwood revealed that in 1994, he had rediscovered the gold-hot pants he wore in the film and sold them through an auction house for nearly $1,000. I think he could have gotten more.
I think he should have gotten more for that.
They are now part of the Hard Rock Memorabilia Collection and can be viewed at the Orlando Hard Rock.
I am ashamed to say I've been to a lot of Hard Rock cafes. I've been to one in Berlin. I've been to one in Vegas. Was there one in Seattle for a short time?
I think so.
I think I went to that one too. And I think one might be too many.
I've been to the Rainforest Cafe too many times.
I miss the Rainforest Cafe. Theme restaurants. I think Five Nights at Freddy's ruined it. I'm never going to get one again.
Yeah.
Not until the generation that came up on Freddy.
Five Nights at Freddy's.
FNAF is what we... FNAF. I've watched every like game theory on FNAF, and I really like the game theories about it. I will never play that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not into jump scares. But right out... Oh, do we have anything else that you want to talk about this number?
Nope.
So he ends up on the side of the tank, and Frankenfurter says, "That's no way to act the first time out of the tank, but since you're an exceptional beauty, I guess we'll, you know, excuse it or whatever." And so he asks, "What do you think?" And Riff Raff's like, "Amazing." Magenta's like, "Awesome." And Columbia says,
"He's okay." Which was my like gut reaction every time I see it. Even to this day, I'm just sort of like, "Yeah, he's okay." But I mean, later on with Columbia, there's a reason. There's probably a reason why she just finds him okay. Oh, he's, no.
No, that's not how we use that. Okay. We can use that for a couple scenes real soon.
She should say, like, "If I had half a mind."
He's like, "I think we could," Frankfurter says, "I think we can do better than that." She drags him over. He drags him over to the couple. And he's like, "Janet, what do you think?" And she goes, she like glances at Brad and she's like, I don't really like a guy who's got so many muscles.
Right. But she's kind of lying because, like, there's, like, it goes into a song where Frankenfurter is, like, giving gifts to Rocky because it's his birthday.
Uh-huh.
Like, he gives him, like, what is a horse, like, weights.
Yeah.
But also, like, a horse, like, one of those pommel horses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Janet, at the very end of that song, says,
I'm a muscle fan.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't have a really good falsetto.
That's okay. And towards the end of the song, we get Frankenfurter and Rocky going in front of this red door, and we hear something from behind the red door.
Oh, I would like to note that this song is the first time I saw a man objectifying another man.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, as my notes say, transformative for me. Okay, so the door beeps. Now, here's the thing. That's the first half of this song, right? That's the first half of this song.
Oh, yeah.
So then the red door opens. We find out it's a freezer. Frankenfurter screams as it almost crushes him, which is very nice. Mm-hmm. And then Columbia goes, hey! Because all she does is high-pitched. And you hear a...
And then as ice normally does in a freezer, it just sort of has this block, just like a slab right behind the door.
Yeah.
And crashing through that door is Meatloaf on a motorcycle. And this is Eddie!
Pew, pew, pew.
He's my favorite character.
Is it because we don't have to talk about him for very long?
He's also has like one of the best numbers. Hoppatootie, bless my soul. I really love that rock and roll.
I used to think it said opportunity.
Yeah, because what does hoppatootie mean?
Patootie. Hot ass.
Sex.
Hoppatootie. You're a cutie patootie. You got a cute butt. I said the word ass. Did we bleep that one? I've said it twice now.
But it's also like an aspect of rock and roll has always been sex. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's they go together.
I've
like...
done all of those things. Sorry, Mom.
You've been in a rock band?
No. No, but I've enjoyed rock and roll, and he's never explicitly in a rock band. He only plays an instrument. And if that's the case, I played the trumpet for a hot minute in fifth grade.
Okay. Then that means I've done all three as well. Sorry, Mom and Dad, but you're not here anymore.
Bringing it down.
We're just bringing it to a dark place. Bringing it to a dark place.
Well, that's in line with the movie because after Eddie's number, which he, like, there's some fun things. Like, everybody's enjoying this song except for Frankenfurter.
Everyone loves this number.
Because everybody loves Eddie because he's a great character.
The lyrics in the song, he talks about, I taste your baby pink lipstick. My head swam with the perfume I smelled. Okay, leather jackets. Fishnets, lipstick, lip gloss, like tattoos. Like, these are the things that I think are super cool. And they're all in this film. And it keeps going and going and going. And I'm like, my notes have a lot of, I'm into pink lipstick because of this. And I shouldn't because I'm 40 now. Right? But like, I like to wear a perfume. And maybe, like, you know, people are sensitive and I shouldn't wear it as much. But like, and I don't wear it too much, but like... But I like it because the lyrics are like, it's amazing when this happens. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Slather lip gloss.
Also, I reimagine this film. Like, if I were to remake this film, Jack Black would be Meatloaf.
100%.
Yeah.
Oh, and TikTok got a hold of him doing the Peaches song. And so I know what that sounds like.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah. Peaches, peaches, peaches.
Periodically at work, I'm just sort of like, peaches, 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 peaches.
You just, I mean, like, I don't know. There's something about an unapologetic affection that might be like just fleeting or lustful or whatever, mm-hmm. but I find it very compelling in music.
Yeah.
And Meatloaf and Jack Black do it very well.
Right.
We also, he rides up and down the ramp that is around the room, like through the guests and like around. And
it's very similar to what Rocky goes through, but there's a huge difference because Rocky is kind of scared mm-hmm. and Meatloaf is just fully, Eddie is just fully confident and he knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm. He does have a love and hate tattoo on his knuckles when you see him rev the bike. And it is most definitely written with a ballpoint pen.
A huge head injury on his head, too.
Well, it's not a head injury. It's the remnants of
brain surgery.
So he's like picking up Columbia. They're rolling around. like pretending to bang a little bit. And she's just like so, she's just so enamored with him that like it's adorable. It's the happiest we see her in the entire film. And she was pretty stinking happy during the time warp. But he, oh gosh, Frankfurter's stumbling around being mad. He comes up, he starts smiling as he comes out of the ice box, and he approaches Eddie, and Eddie's like, ah, right? Mm-hmm. Who then falls backwards and then falls forward into the freezer. Like Frankfurter follows him, hits the ground, like has to wrench the axe out of the ground, follows him in there. We see Columbia scream, and then like the music is like all over during this part. And when Frankfurter comes out, his pink snappy gloves have blood on them, and he like holds them out for Magenta to take off. And then like, he like breaks the tension by saying, "One from the vaults," and everybody titters, mm-hmm. right? And he turns to Rocky, who's like scared, and he's like, "Don't be upset. It was a mercy killing," right? And then Rocky is immediately into him now again. Mm-hmm. He like puts his arm out and he goes, "Ah," which is not bad for me.
Yeah, I know.
And I shouldn't have that flip flop of emotion. Oh, he's a murderer. But
Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then he launches right back in to the Charles Atlas song.
Right. In just 7 days.
And 6 long nights.
I can make you a man.
Dig it if you care.
I know that you have quoted that it was a mercy killing thing to me.
I quote that to you all the time. Yeah. I do the "it's raining." Don't be upset, it was a mercy killing.
And the second time that this song comes around, at the very end, it has the wedding bells.
That's our second wedding processional.
Right. And you see Rocky and Frankenfurter going into a honeymoon suite.
And as the curtain closes behind them, and merely a curtain between them on all the guests and the people they've hijacked.
I mean, I have a curtain that's blocking the hallway from the basement that I occupy, so.
But I mean, that's fine. That's like one tiny doorway. This is a huge stage in your laboratory.
True. And you do have like a lot of people right outside that curtain.
And as it closes, Frankenfurter jumps on it. And I'm like, that's not right. He's been alive for like 30 minutes.
I know.
Which is why I brought up like how, yeah, why?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I could, I don't want to, he's a baby. He right. can't speak. You don't know what cognitive level.
Technically, he sings and but he doesn't really speak outside of it. Like the only words he knows are the words to the song Sword of Damocles.
And that is an unfortunate indicator of intelligence.
Is that because Eddie knew about
that's the, sword
the
of question?
Damocles?
That's a spoiler mm-hmm. that comes up until later. But let's talk about it now because who are we? But that later, Dr. Frankenfurter's like, "Do you think I made a mistake splitting a brain between the both of them?" And yes, that was a mistake because he's like, he's acting just like Eddie did. Really?
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where if you argued that he wasn't, that he was older, that it was just part of his brain, but there's a part, but he refers to himself as being like Rocky refers to himself as being young.
Yeah. I really invested in the cognitive ability of my partner
mm-hmm.
and the idea of not having gotten to like have a discussion and like figure out where you are and where we're at. And like, yeah, it means I'm in my head a bit. Maybe I'm just not so rashly lustful, but I don't want to not know. Could you imagine like you come out at like you go into this very passionate situation and yeah, you have sex with it. And then they're like, "Hey, that was great. You want to listen to Rush Limbaugh reruns?" Mm-hmm. And I'd have to be like,
"Yeah,
what have I done?
This person's
not fully developed.
I need to know that the person that I'm with is someone that I can like, I mean, when you talk about Rush Limbaugh, like I don't know if I could have sex with someone who is pro-life.
Oh my God. Or like a misogynist, like a hardcore.
Yeah,
I need my gingerbread man fully baked before we get it on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I'm going to build a man for myself. Like remember in, what was the movie called? Real Science? Or the one where the kids build a woman? She doesn't bang them. She would. Weird Science. Okay. Yeah, Weird Science. Like they build the perfect woman. Right? And she's beautiful, but she isn't like looking at them and being like, She comes out fully adulted, right? But like, they're children. And she's like, nah.
There is a myth. I'm wondering which it is. One second.
Somebody makes like a clay sculpture.
A golem?
Yeah, it's Pygmalion. So there's a Greek myth called Pygmalion where a man sculpts a woman out of clay. And he ends up like bringing, he wishes that she was brought to life because this is the perfect woman. But then he finds someone else that he prefers. And then this woman is just left to her own devices because she was born with one thing and purpose, and it was to satisfy this man. And now he doesn't want her anymore. So it's like, it's you know, a tale of, you know, it's a cautionary tale of, you know, but it's, there's also this level of consent. And like, how often do we put this expectation as specifically from a heteronormative perspective? Like so many people are so aggravated over, we're exposing children to gay things and what's that going to do to them? But then like, these are the same people who like see a kid boy and a kid girl, you know, playing together, and they're like, oh, they're going to be so cute together when they get older and they're going to get married. And I'm like, you don't know that.
Well, then people are like, don't indoctrinate my kid. And then they're like, and you better get to church on Sunday. Like,
right.
Everyone's influenced. Like, you just can't, I mean, and that's fine, but I think a better model for society is teaching people how to think for themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's called critical thinking.
I mean, it takes a minute, but do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what?
We should go back to the expert.
We should have some exposition, yeah. Mm. As they go off to their honeymoon suite, although Riff Raff just f***ing said, the master is not married, nor do I think he ever will be. Movie. Get it straight, or get it queer, or whatever the hell.
No. Get it alphabet mafia.
Yeah. He's all like, Janet and Brad have been shown to their two separate rooms. And then Riff Raff and Magenta are watching Janet in her room. And she looks up and she knows there's a camera there, which I think is really interesting. Her room is pink. Brad's room is blue. This is not a mistake.
They are the exact same room, just with different lighting.
I think that is a realistic, practical effect.
Mm-hmm.
But it also really highlights the gender binary that these guys are in.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Let's fuck that up a little.
Yeah.
Okay. So my notes here say, let's shelf the consent conversation we've had a ton and just appreciate the playfulness of this scene.
It's really hard for me to do, but if you want to do it,
okay.
Let
me describe the scene in a way that I love this scene because it tantalizes me a little bit, and then we can talk about that. It kind of leans into it a little bit. It leans into it for me a little bit of a positive way.
In romance novels, these scenes would fall under what's called dubious consent.
Okay.
Which happens a lot in romance novels where there is not direct or enthusiastic consent.
And enthusiastic consent is key.
Yeah.
Coercion is not cool. I get you on that. But let's separate that and just take the farce of it with us into this scene. Janet's laying down in her bed. It's backlit, which serves the practical effect of it. And
there's lace over the bed, or like sheer fabric over the bed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's got that canopy situation going on. That's every kid wanted as a kid. Like every kid wanted.
It is gorgeous.
A princess bed, like freaking night, Arabian Nights, maybe kind of feel. Anyways, Brad enters and he's like, "Janet, are you all right?" And she goes, "Oh, Brad, come here." I can't do it verbatim, but it's important that this text is specific. And he goes, "It'll be all right, Janet." And she invites him into the bed. They start to kiss and she's like, "Oh, Brad." And she strokes his head and the wig comes off and she goes, "You." And he's like, "It's all right, Janet." It's Frankenfurter. And she didn't know. And then this is the problem. He's all like, "You want to?" And he starts to kiss her and she's like, no. Oh, I'd never." And he's all like, she's like, "What have you done to Brad?" He's like, "Nothing. Do you think I should?" And she's like, "I'd never, I was saving myself." And he's all like, "But I bet you're not all spent yet," which is kind of hot when he says it. And then, because that's the thing, I grew up with people, and you did too, who were like, whose youth group leaders were like, "You are like a Snapple. And when you snap that top and that freshness seal is gone," this is a literal argument they made to me, they said, and you get passed around. Do you really want to be the last person who gets that bottle?
For me, it was tape. Thank you for relating me to tape. I appreciate being related to tape, and now my stickiness is completely gone. I am not tape. I am a human being.
I'm not a backwash bottle of poor man's juice.
I am not some flavorless soda. My fizz is still there. Would you like me to show you my fizz?
I am not a body that can be used up.
Mm-hmm.
Your vagina doesn't stretch out. You don't run out of orgasms. Like, you are not less because you've experienced pleasure. The problem with this scene is she has a specific partner she has wanted to be monogamous with, and that is not being honored.
Right. I do like that you're going to run out of orgasms.
Oh, yeah.
Were you told that?
I read that in a book that I have. That you only have so many, and I mean, literally you do only have so many orgasms in your life, but a book can't dictate that. You and your partner and yourself alone or your partners or whatever, that's what gets to decide it.
That is the funniest thing. Like, that's the kind of thing I would put into like making fun of, like, you can't make that shit up.
Yeah.
But because you don't have to, because it's in a book saying you're going to run out of orgasms.
Yeah.
But specifically framing it like you have only like 172 orgasms in you and they're going to run out unless you, you know, save them all for marriage. like
it's so dumb. Like, I was obsessed with my hymen and it turned out that when I finally got to getting busy, I didn't have one. So I was never the freshness seal. It got broken when I was really, really young. I didn't know about it. It happened before I had consciousness. I didn't know I didn't have one. So I expected to have the stereotypical painful first time. And here's the thing, what I know now, in contradiction to every romance novel I met or read and a lot of film that I watched, and like, that's not supposed to happen. With care and thought and like, and caressing and like doing all the things that you're supposed to do. I mean, like, if you have a rough first time and you're into it, hey, I'm not to judge. But if you and your partner, because here's the thing, even now, if you have rough sex, you can bleed a little bit. The skin is thin. You can be sensitive. You know, what you're doing, how you're doing it plays a lot into it. But if you want to have a pleasant, gentle first time, you don't have to bleed. And I do give credit to this movie for not touching on that at all. But she does say, I was saving myself. And he says, you're not all spent yet. And this is where it gets dubious. She goes, but you won't tell Brad? And that's where consent comes in, even if it's a little bit chewy.
Right. It's like part of what makes the scene a little bit iffy for me is the fact that she, at the very beginning, is just sort of like, no. And then at the very end, she's like, well, okay. Or she does the,
okay.
But I don't think she minds.
I don't think so, because you could also frame it as like she has been told that she has to save herself. And this is the first time when she and Brad have been exposed to something that's different or outside of their what they've been told their entire life. And like, part of the reason why certain groups want to go ahead and destroy knowledge, like everything that's going down in Ron DeSantis's Florida. Part of that is because the more information that people get, the more likely they are to not vote conservative.
Also, it is statistically proven that the more educated a woman is, the better her sex life is and the more competent a lover she is.
Right.
Because the fact that we have in our culture just withheld that information from women, it harms women. And I think, okay, so you know the, I don't know if it's a stereotype or if it's like just, you know, the whole like, I'm not trying to be racist, but the whole 72 virgins that someone's supposed to receive for a jihad or something like that. I apologize already for my ignorance, but the idea of receiving 72 virgins is not good for me. I wouldn't want, now I know I'm not on that list, but like, what would I do with 72 virgins? Give me one really nicely experienced person.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a better time.
Yeah. But there's a level of power in having someone who is a virgin. And this is what you see in like, what is it, child brides that are literally happening in conservative states that are in the Midwest. There are like, there's a series of like conservative states where they allow for a 14-year-old to be wed to someone who is like in his 40s.
I didn't even have my period by the time I was 14.
I know. And like but there is power in that. There is and that's really what they're going for. It's not just because of.
That's not to say I think if you're old enough to bleed, you're old enough to breed. Yeah. I just said that's just how young I was.
Right.
Okay.
Now, but there's a level of control. Like when people talk about how rape is not actually about sex, it's about control
or violence.
That's what the rapist is trying to get out of it. It's not about sex. It is about being able to feel like you're in control of something.
Mm-hmm. It's rage.
Mm-hmm.
And
rage at the fact that you probably, at the fact that the rapist probably doesn't feel like they have control over certain aspects. Like when men talk about how women have all the power in sex, it's like in some ways they can, but there's also a lot of opportunities for men to have that men have all of the power when men have the majority of the power when it comes to silencing sexual assault victims. Mm. And so how is that not letting women have control? That women don't have control in that.
Well, they have control if they followed all the rules.
Mm-hmm.
If you live that perfect Madonna life, then you get to have tears that mean something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are deviant in any way, if you are possessing your autonomy in a way that doesn't honor the patriarchy, then you are worth nothing. You are not going to be that sad little white girl on a poster somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be dead.
Yeah.
And forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And this scene is so much more playful than that. And if you remember it in the realm of camp,
right,
in this playfulness that it was supposed to be intended, and that at least they nod at consent.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's dubious,
it is definitely dubious, but I mean, at the very end, Janet says,
she laughs and she's happy about
it. She seems happy about it. So where are we going to go from this?
My next line is, creature abuse pisses me off.
Oh, yeah, because Riff Raff and Magenta go after Rocky as he's sleeping. And it's this nod to Frankenstein and how he's scared by fire.
Mm-hmm. They chase him Riff Raff chases him burns him with a candelabra. And then as he escapes down the empty elevator shaft, he throws a candle down. And I hate this scene, but that final f*** you is pretty funny.
Yeah, but considering where Riff Raff is... At the very end, you can see, there's a reason why he's doing it. And so it's a little bit, the throwing of the last candle is a kind of hilarious when you find out about Riff Raff's motivations.
What is his motivations for?
They never liked me.
Oh, I get it.
And so
I think he's mad that he has better hair than him, but whatever. Mm. Okay, so let's cut to Brad's room. Same room, same bed, mm-hmm. lit blue.
What's great about both Brad and Janet's scenes from a production aspect is that you don't see anybody's face. So Tim Curry definitely came in.
But they frame it in a way that you can't tell.
Yeah.
He looks diminutively small in this scene, and he looks big and masculine in the previous scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so perfect.
But that's also Tim Curry's acting.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. They do dub the voice in for the first few lines until he pulls off the wigs on.
Yeah.
And either the other character pulls off the wig in either scene. So she's like, oh, Brad, I'm frightened. He's like, come here, Janet. Right.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, Brad, you're so brave and strong. And he strokes her hair and the wig falls off and he's like, you. And then the exact same dialogue happens. What are you doing? What have you done with Janet? Nothing. Do you think I should? And then he's like, I think you like this. Kiss, kiss, kiss. The other person says their partner's name. Oh, Janet. Oh, Janet. Right. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, she's probably asleep by now. What do you want to wake her and scare her or whatever? And he's like, I've never, never. Instead of I was saving myself, he says, mm-hmm. I never, never, never. And he's all like, I think you like it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he's like, well, you won't tell Janet. And
yeah.
He's like, no. No, totally mm-hmm. not. But the part I don't like is when in both scenes where he's like, do you want to see her? Do you want him to see you or her to see you like this? And then flips him onto
yeah. And Tim Curry takes their legs and you see their legs shoot straight up.
Yeah. But the idea. Okay.
I'm just saying,
There is some really great leg control in this movie.
Yes. Yes. And I think that what another thing that takes away from the pain of the first one is that the exact same thing happens to the man.
Mm-hmm.
That frames the whole thing different for me.
Well, it also puts Frankenfurter as kind of villainous. Like, mm-hmm. we've already seen him murder someone, and we've seen him, you know, create something specifically so he can have sex with it.
He has sex 3 times in a row in probably less than 2 hours or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, one, that's impressive. Two, like, he's insatiable, and that's supposed to be his character. Mm-hmm. And it's a character flaw
mm-hmm.
because that's brought up later. I mean,
well, I wouldn't say the movie brings up the fact that he's insatiable as a character flaw.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, they call it the decadence of your lifestyle.
Yeah.
But that's what he does. He's mm-hmm. just does everything ornate and big and showy. And it's not about the mission, whatever that was.
It's not like sex as a group sport. Or it's like instead of sex being a competition, it's like sex as like two people or more coming together to just enjoy each other's company. There, for Frankenfurter, it's more about the conquest and less about the other person's pleasure.
It
feels
looks,
that way.
It looks like he satisfies his partners.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky's sleeping. Janet's not mad about it till she finds out that he slept with Brad too.
Right.
And then she does retaliatory sex. Mm-hmm. Frankenfurter's not having retaliatory sex.
Right. But how much of that is like benefiting them for themselves, for their own sake, or benefiting them for his sake?
Yeah. I don't know. If a lover is selfish but still gets me off, I don't know if I'd be mad about it. They're not invested in a relationship with him. It's merely a physical thing. And he makes it very clear later on that he's just into sensation and
that's a good
sensual
point.
So like, It's dubious. Yeah. Okay. So Janet is now walking around in her underwear, and my notes go, she had a robe. She just decided to leave it.
Yeah.
She had a pink robe, admittedly, but whatever.
Thanks, Applauder, for returning for part two of our discussion on 1975's cult classic, Rocky Horror Picture Show. We still have one part remaining and can't wait to finish our plot walkthrough and deliver the goods with our shocked and applaudable moments. If you've still got some time to stay for a bite, I've got some recommendations. Vintage Video has a recent watch of the sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show, Shock Treatment. And Piecing It Together podcast has a new episode discussing the hyper-violent stylized action movie, Sisu. Check out links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and someone who might have originally thought this movie was about Rocky the Moose, Jen. Here at Shocked and Applaud, we openly admit that sometimes we get things wrong. Have we messed up something about one of your favorite movies? You can contact us at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com or leave us feedback at shockedandapplaud.com using the Contact Us link at the top of the page. We'd love to hear your input, and we'll most likely credit you with a correction in a future episode. We'll be back next week for the conclusion of this underground camp 70s musical. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.